Canadians 12 and over have had opportunity to get vaccinated for COVID-19.
And just in time, as the Delta variant begins sweeping across the world at a time when many places have lifted restrictions designed to stem the tide.
But cases in Canada are rising in number, and it looks like we're facing down a fourth wave. I'm Adam Toy.
And I'm Dave McIver, and this is Why.
Back in the spring, provincial and federal leaders were predicting a one-dose and then a two-dose summer.
It's the number one game show for hot, infectious singles.
But as the summer wore on, the Delta variant joined the party, becoming the dominant strain in Canada in early July.
And now in early August, we're seeing new cases start to rise exponentially, the signature of another wave.
Okay, guys, but I say fourth, you say wave. Fourth
wave!
Let's go!
So what is the Delta variant, and how is it different from COVID-19 as it first emerged from Wuhan, China, and the UK variant?
But before we get into that, a bit of review of COVID-19.
If I understand correctly, COVID-19 is it's an envelope of instructions that once it's inside of our cells, those instructions tell the cells how to reproduce that envelope. And if I understand it correctly, it's this envelope is surrounded by a number of what are called protein spikes, which are kind of like keys to get inside of our cells. And that's and the protein spikes are what classifies this as a coronavirus. Do I understand kind of the COVID-19 structure itself?
That's basically true. It's you've got a package of instructions with inside an envelope that infects your cells and multiplies itself and then it escapes from the cells infected by what we call budding. So it puts some proteins on the surface of the cell membrane and it makes a round envelope and buds off. And then it's free to go infect other cells. It's collected the instructions that are on the RNA are collected within that envelope.
That's Dr. Daniel Gregson.
I'm an infectious diseases physician and a medical microbiologist and an associate professor at the Cumming School of Medicine at the University of Calgary.
Dr. Gregson, the Delta variant that was first detected in India in late 2020, how is that different from the original strain that came out of Wuhan, China in late 2019?
Before Delta came along, there was another variant, which was just had a mutation in the what we call the D614G part of the spike protein that really became the dominant strain worldwide. And since then, we've seen these new variants they're talking about all have new mutations that have accumulated on top of this D614G mutation. And the Delta variant is one with some mutations that are on the what we call the receptor binding domain, or that piece of the key that sort of gets into the lock to open the door. So there's mutations both in that portion of the what we call the spike protein, the little thing that sticks off the end of the envelope. And then there's a mutation that there's sort of a lever that sort of cranks the key to get in, and there's a mutation there as well. And we know from kinetics of both in viruses within tissue cultures, you can take the virus and grow it in cells and see how fast it replicates, that this virus outcompetes other variants in tissue culture. And we also can tell from looking at sort of viral copies in the samples we collect for diagnosed infections that it appears that the Delta variant has a little more rapid onset in terms of when the incubation period. So I think with the original Wuhan strain, we were talking about 7 days of incubation. And with the Delta variant, we're now talking about 4 days. And that the levels of virus that are being produced in the nose and the throat at the onset of those, that positivity is much higher than it is with the base strain. Base variant, sorry. Yeah.
Right. So the Delta variant, it sounds like it makes you sicker faster, a few things. One, it sounds like it's able to get inside of our cells better than the previous strain.
That's true. Yes.
And as you said, with that key thing, the changes to the spike protein, it also sounds like it creates more virus, so it can spread outside of our body more, and that happens earlier than the original strain.
That's what we're seeing in the experiments that are being done, and that's generally what's being noticed in communities where Delta is a primary a variant, that there's more rapid spread, and which of course is dependent upon people's behavior as well, and it appears more infectious than previous strains.
Wow. So, on what kind of order of magnitude is Delta from the wild from the Wuhan strain, or even from what's Alpha, which was previously known as the UK variant? How much more?
Right.
Yeah.
So the feeling with the UK variant was somewhere between 1.5 to 2 times more infectious than the original European strain. So there's European variants, sorry. And then Delta appears to be, again, about 1.5 to 2 times more in transmissible than those the Alpha strain. So we're looking at quite a large increase in the what we call the R-naught, which is really transmissibility when nobody's immune and there's no precautions being taken to prevent spread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if there's nothing to stop it, you said behavior or other measures like vaccines, the rate of reproduction, the rate that it spreads is much worse.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you look at what's gone on in the UK and Spain over the last 6 weeks to 2 months, they've had a very large outbreak. Rapid onset of spread of the Delta variant, a very steep curve. Their numbers are probably, total numbers they're picking up are probably 1/2 to 2/3 of what their peak was in the third wave. The only really good news about that is that their admissions to hospital and their deaths are nowhere near what we saw in the previous waves, primarily because a large number of people are immunized.
So what do we know about the severity of the Delta variant? Let's just start with unvaccinated people.
It's a little hard to compare what's going on because we're looking at different populations being infected over different time periods. There's a general impression that you're more likely to become sicker with the Delta variant, and that if your base rate of hospital admissions was in the range of 1%, it might bump up to 1.2 to 1.5% of the population that gets infected in a non-immunized group. We do know that the data is very, 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 that people who've had 2 doses of vaccine rarely get admitted to hospital with complications of the Delta variant. So what you're seeing in the United Kingdom and the United States is almost all the admissions are in people who are unimmunized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Leading to multiple media outlets and officials, especially in the U.S., calling this a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Let's talk about vaccinations then. They've been around. Canadians have had an opportunity. All eligible Canadians have had an opportunity to get their 2 doses for a good amount of time now. How effective are those vaccines against the Delta variant? What's the data show? Because previously, I know I think the Pfizer vaccine had like 95% efficacy against hospitalization. How has this?
Yeah, the data coming out of there's just recent data out of the United States looking at this showing that you're really looking at a really 92 to 95% efficacy against preventing death. So I mean that's better than any other therapy we have for COVID. I mean, if you get admitted to hospital with COVID, I mean, it's a good chance you're going to end up in ICU, and there's a relatively high chance that you're going to end up dead. So I think these vaccines have been, particularly the mRNA vaccines and even the AstraZeneca are more effective than we'd hoped for. And they certainly will prevent people from being hospitalized, getting into ICUs and dying. The difference with the Delta variant is we're starting to see some immunized people come down with symptoms of, upper respiratory tract symptoms. So running nose, sore throat and cough and not moving on to more severe disease for the most part. there's some interesting data out of Singapore showing that those people, those small number of people who do get infected, sort of clear off their infection much more quickly than the people without who have not been immunized. That, you know, the duration of illness is less. The number of people who have big fevers is less. So it really is moves this infection from being a, you know, potentially life-threatening infection to what we would generally experience as a common cold.
Those cases of people who are fully vaccinated but all that, but then getting COVID, those have been known as breakthrough cases. Do we know roughly what the percentage of vaccinated people who can then go on to get breakthrough cases, who then become breakthrough cases?
Yeah, it's in the range of about 10%. Depends on the study you look at, somewhere in that ballpark. So now that you know that 10, you're you have a 10% a chance of, if you get infected with COVID, developing those symptoms, but your odds of getting infected are also reduced. So if you look at a study out of, there's a study just published recently out of Philadelphia looking at teachers who had not been immunized, and the rate of infection, you know, per day was way lower in the immunized group, to the point it's about 90% less. So that, and that's just when you're screening people, even asymptomatic infections, they were doing nasal swabs on a weekly basis.
So we know that people who are fully vaccinated but also catch COVID are known as breakthrough cases. They can still spread the virus. How much do we know about that, and how does that add to the challenge?
Well, we know that occurs. We're not sure, you know, how frequently that occurs. We do know that again, if you do get infected and you've been immunized, that your viral load drops relatively quickly compared to people who have not been immunized. So you're infectious period is going to be shorter, so you're probably much less likely to transmit, but it's not zero.
Dr. Gregson, I know epidemiology isn't your specialty, but you know about herd immunity, I'm sure. Early on in the vaccine rollout, estimates for herd immunity was to get between 70 and 80% of a population vaccinated. How does the Delta variant change that number, or does it?
Yeah, having herd immunity would imply that our value that we all talk about is less than or equal to one without any restrictions being in place. So we're not there in Alberta. We're not there in Canada. You know, so there, we're not there in Israel either. So we're seeing more cases worldwide. So the herd immunity is probably a term that's not really applicable to the individual. So what you're saying is the chances of the R value is one. That means for every person who's infected, one other person gets infected, right? Mm-hmm. So that means that we're not going to see large outbreaks. We're not going to see, you know, our hospital system being overwhelmed. And truly, at that point in time, will be endemic. That's not the situation currently. Our R value is nowhere near one. And those people who aren't immunized, it's just a matter of time. You know, you're rolling a dice every day when you leave the house as to whether or not you're going to get infected. So you're going to see that number on a monthly basis go way up when you sort of take the gloves off the virus, so to speak. You're going to be running at R values that are a little bit higher than that. And again, it's just a matter of time. Mm. Even once we're all immunized in Canada, or if even once 85% of us immunized in Canada, what we're going to see is people travel. And they're going to bring back virus, and those people who have not been immunized will at some point in time, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, maybe not even next year, but at some time they're going to get COVID-19. So it's going to be similar to influenza. I mean, if you're over 10 or 15 years of age, you've had influenza. And it's just going to happen for everybody. So it's not so bad to get COVID when you're 10, but if you're 15 and not immunized, it's not a good thing.
I remember early on in the pandemic, there was the evocation of wartime messaging, wartime imagery, the idea that we're all in this fight together, and that the best thing that a lot of folks can do to fight the battle against COVID while vaccines were being developed was to sit on your was to sit on your sofa and binge TV, right?
Yeah.
And you know, soon after that, there was the, you know, wearing a mask and as a means of protecting both yourself and others. And then, you know, there was that call to arms, literally, to roll up your sleeves and get the needle, to get one and two doses of this vaccine. Has Delta changed the battlefield to continue that war message?
Yeah, well, if you're looking at what the CDC is recommending, they've essentially stratified, you know, areas of the country that have by their vaccine rates and their case rates. So they're saying, you know, if your vaccine rate is high and your case rate is low, then those what we call non-pharmaceutical interventions, the distancing and the masking and the closing of restaurants and venues, doesn't need to happen. But if your immunization rates are low or your transmission rates are high, or your case rates are high, then your use positivity rates in their cases, then they're suggesting re-implementation of masking. You're seeing that happen in many states. The other thing some people are doing is vaccine passports. So I believe New York just today or yesterday announced that they'd be using vaccine passports for restaurants and movie theaters and venues like that to try and reduce the amount of transmissions that's going on. So you can play with the tap, so to speak, in terms of how much COVID you're going to have by how much of these interventions you're going to have in place on top of your immunization. If we can get enough people immunized, we can have the tap open a little bit wider. If we don't get people immunized, we're going to have to keep the tap on a little bit more of these non-pharmaceutical interventions.
So we're still fighting a battle against COVID.
We are just, you know, you've seen our numbers in Alberta. We're sort of entering a fourth wave here. The wave is going to be different. It's not going to be like previous waves. We're going to have fewer deaths and fewer hospital admissions, but it's still going to put a strain on both individuals who get sick and those people have to care for them in the healthcare system. It's not an easy thing.
Mm-hmm. I was reading the Public Health Agency of Canada's website earlier, and it appears that the Delta variant became the dominant variant in Canada sometime end of June. Does the presence of the Delta variant, does that delay when COVID is likely to become endemic from a pandemic phase? Or does that really depend on our reactions, I suppose?
It depends on our reaction. So if you look what's happened in the UK, they've had a wave. It's a very, very high wave with a narrow spike to the top of it. So what's happened is the people who have not been immunized are getting infected, and then they're now immune, right? So you can actually, you know, the other way to handle this, like the Swedes at the beginning of the epidemic said, we're going to let this rip through the population, and then we'll have herd immunity. But it depends on what you want to do, whether you want to have a large number of cases or whether you need to contain the number of cases you're having. And a lot of that, you know, a lot of decisions made at the public health level are based on really hospital admissions and the healthcare system rather than, you know, protecting you as an individual. So if you've not been immunized, you're sort of, at least in Alberta, you're missing your window to skip COVID.
So it sounds like your advice is to get the shot.
Safest thing you can do. This vaccine is safer than anything else I do in my day-to-day practice in medicine. So when I administer an antibiotic for someone who's got a deadly infection, I don't know, a 1 in a million chance of a side effect is like minuscule compared to what I look at. I'm looking at, you know, 5 to 10% of patients having some sort of side effect from medications I give them.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily deadly, but some sort of side effect.
Sure. Yeah. And it almost sounds like it's not quite time to throw away our masks.
I think it's unfortunate that, you know, there's a large segment of the population that, although they're at low risk, have not been immunized. And, you know, a large portion of that population, I'm talking about young children under the age of 11, has spent their last 18 months in either, you know, at home or with masks on to try and prevent transmission in the community. So I find it hard not masking when I see a young child in a in a mall. I you know, for adults, and there's this libertarian approach saying that, you know, you've made your choice and you also get the consequences of those choices. And that's your, I guess, right. That's a libertarian approach to it. I'm not quite that libertarian. I would point out that while you yourself are choosing not to be immunized and you're going to have the you know, physical side effects of whatever infections you do or do not get, that the healthcare system is going to take care of you no matter how sick you get, and we're all going to pay for that.
As we were speaking with Dr. Gregson, new studies on the Delta variant were still being published. While the understanding of the Delta variant and its effects is still in relatively early days, the message remains. Vaccination is one of the most effective methods of protection.
This Is Why is produced by me, Adam Toy, and Dave McIver. It's a national radio show and a podcast.
You can reach us by email at thisiswhy@globalnews.ca and on Twitter at thisiswhy.
If you like what you hear and want to hear more, make sure you subscribe to This Is Why so you never miss an episode. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, tell a friend.
Thanks for listening. Wear a mask and get vaccinated. We'll see you soon.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.